Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
And welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. Here with Chef Cal and my wife, Krista, Mrs. Chef. She
Good
goes
evening.
By sometimes.
Hello.
Sometimes, yeah. But you found Cooking Like a Pro. We appreciate you tuning in. You found us here at 1460 AM again every Wednesday talking about food. We'd love if you'd like to join us. If you have a question you'd like to join us, we're also at 96.5 FM. And the number down here local is 530-605-4567. That's 605-4567. And also, how else can they get us? How can they send us a question, hon?
They can do that on a web page. You can pull it up on your phone or on your laptop. It is cookinglikeapropodcast.net.
There you go. So you don't even have to get on the air if you don't want to.
No.
Yeah, okay. But
they can leave us a voice message. They can send us a text message if they're on their phone.
All right. Well, so a variety of ways to get a hold of us, folks, but we got some wonderful things to talk about for the next hour. So let's dive right in or jump right in front of the stove, so to speak. Our fresh update that we've been starting with for each of our shows so far. Actually, we're starting our second month here.
Yeah.
So you went down to the farmer's market. I didn't get a chance to go. I don't know where I was, but I was somewhere else.
Yeah.
And what'd you find down there, hon?
I found melons. Oh. Melons this week, and some really nice ones. I found an ambrosia, and something I've never heard of before is a Charlin.
Charlin. That Charlin was excellent.
That was just like, our son says, like cotton candy and marshmallow
melon. Yeah, I don't think he's ever eaten melon.
Not like that. That is so sweet.
He's kind of at that age, you know, where and he's 15, and it's like, I say, Isaac, trust me. Do you trust your dad? Then taste this, okay, because he's kind of at a place where he needs to either say yes or no, and he's been saying yes. He's actually really been trying a lot. His menu is increasing, so to speak.
But his palate pulled up the sweetness.
It was like sugar.
Yeah, it was like eating cotton candy.
Yeah, a lot of those are a lot of the different melons out there have a lot of sugar to them. There's a you know, cantaloupe and honeydew, which are lower in sugar, but then your watermelon is quite a bit higher in sugar. So, you know, I mean, you might want to check with your, you know, if you have a diabetes or a concern with sugar, then a watermelon, you might want to just check before you, you know, pound a whole melon or something. But you know, melons are great. They're high in fiber, vitamins A, C, just nutrients galore, really antioxidants too.
Yeah. And they're very refreshing. Especially in the summertime.
This time of year, yeah. I've used them for chilled soups before, which remember we made the gazpacho about a few weeks back, which is a great soup for the summertime.
You can make a watermelon gazpacho?
Yeah, you can use in fact, there's cucumber in the gazpacho that I make as well. So, you know, you can make a variety of different ones. But the challenge with taking a melon and turning it into a soup is that it's you have to really differentiate it from being dessert. Because it can just be too sweet. So you have to add some acid to it, you know, some sort of vinegar, and then maybe even some sort of a spice, you know, cloves, nutmeg, those kind of.
I had addiction in high school. There was a local shop that made watermelon milkshakes.
Oh, no, that sounds good.
Oh, I was addicted to them. Every single week I had to go get one.
Well, sounds like a good one. I ought to try that. I know that, when I date myself back to, when was this? This must have been the late 70s. No, this was in the early 80s. And I was running cross country at the local college, local JC here. And we used to, the coach just sent us out on runs, and we'd run 20 miles, and we'd come back, you know, however many hours later it was. But we'd come back through this one particular field because we'd come back down the highway. On 299, and we had to run across this field, and it had Crenshaw's, that cranky, they had two different types of melon, but we would stop literally and just break the melon open and eat it.
Is a Crenshaw an orange melon? I'm not real familiar with that one.
Yeah. It can be, it's orange, kind of like a cantaloupe. It's part of the, you know, they're all part of the gourd family. It's actually part of what we call a musk melon. And, but they're dry field harvested. There's a Galea out there as well. Again, there are a lot of hybrids that they're making where they'll take one varietal and another varietal and kind of do whatever they do.
That's why I think the Charlin was a hybrid, like an Ambrosia.
Yeah, in their lab coats, and they just come up with, something cool. But, they're great. One thing that I wanted to mention is there's this label. There's this little sticky tag. If you'll notice when you get an apple or you get a melon, and it's called a PLI tag. It stands for positive lot, identification. And the purpose of that, it tells you a couple of different things. But if there is a breakout of some sort of a bacterial disease of some sort or something wrong, E. coli, they need to be able to track it back to where it was picked. So whatever's picked in this particular lot gets this particular sticker on that. And the sticker's going to have that. It's going to also say what country it's from. It'll usually say the brand, and it will say the type. I know that I have a tag sitting in front of me here because it was from an apple today, and it was a Fuji. Fuji's my best. That's my favorite apple.
That's my favorite.
For just eating, you know, not for cooking. Doesn't really work good for cooking. Doesn't hold up like a Granny Smith or some, you know, but a Fuji is my favorite. Just grab an apple and eat it. But anyway, so the supplier has to have these tags on there. So if you look at the tag, most people just pick it off and throw it away. There is helpful information on that, especially if you want to see where it's coming from. Because, again, if it's on your tomato and it says it's from, you know, Mexico or Canada or somewhere that where it takes a long time to get here, that means it had to be picked before it was completely ripe because it's going to ripen through the process of traveling here. Yeah, so, you know, you generally want to get something that's fairly close. You know, if you get your strawberries and they say, you know, Driscoll, well, you know, Driscoll's not that far away. You know, it's just on the other side of Gilroy down there on the other side of the bay. But, you know, so if you're getting your strawberries from there, certainly the ones that are coming from grown around here.
They don't need a sticker.
Yeah, well, they don't need a sticker. I don't even know if they have a Shasta County sticker. I don't think they have a Shasta County sticker.
Yeah, we actually had somebody come up from down around the Sacramento area. They drove 2 hours to get their produce up here. Still close.
Yeah, still close. But this is the time of year where the farmer markets are out there. Farmers markets are just a great place to go. Because what I love about that is talking to the growers, talking to the people that are picking it, talking to the people that are harvesting it, you know, from the field. And they, you can get additional information. And there's just some things, you know, you need to know. Like we've had a lot of, for example, dry weather here, hot, dry weather. But for example, if we get rain, then you know you're going to have to be careful with your lettuce because lettuce grows straight up. When you're talking about like something like a romaine lettuce, a leaf lettuce, green lettuce, or a green leaf, red leaf, those grow straight up and they're harvested that way. So because they're standing up, when it rains, you can get dirt in there, and then anytime you can get bugs in there. So you want to make sure that you clean that really well. And there's actually I did a video on that, YouTube video. Is that up yet? Nope.
The one where you were shaking the water out?
Yeah.
Over the floor?
Well, yeah, but that's – you got to get it. You want it on the floor, you want it in your salad.
Okay. Well,
you know, because, you know, then your salad dressing ends up at the bottom of your plate. You want your lettuce to be cold and crisp. So is that up yet, or are we still editing that? Okay, well we'll get that done and up to you because how you clean your lettuce is also very, very important. But again, melons, perfect time of the year, some great varieties out there. Take a look how to tell when a melon is ripe, especially your melons like your ambrosias and your cantaloupes, your honeydews. What you want to do is the end of the melon that is furthest away from where it is picked from where the stem would have been, it needs to be able to depress that. You need to be able to push that in. It should not be soft, but you should be able to depress it a little bit.
Kind of like you would do an avocado, maybe a little bit of give to it. It can move, but not stiff.
A little bit of give, and then you can smell it, and it should smell sweet. whatever the flavor of the melon is inside, you should be able to smell that from that end too. So
when you bring it home and set it on the table, wow, you should smell that clear across the room.
Yep. All about melons and even watermelons. So we appreciate you tuning in here. Again, this is Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cal and my beautiful wife, Krista. We'll be back in just a moment.
Stop by. I can guarantee that you're gonna have a ball learning how to do the watermelon crawl. Well, we got 100 gallons sweet red wine made from the biggest watermelons on the vine. Help yourself to some, but obey the law. If you drink, don't drive. Do the watermelon crawl.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Are you craving a delicious pizza at a great price? Look no further than Charlu's Tap House. Charlu's Tap House is bringing back their incredible pizza deal. Every Tuesday from 4 p.m. until close, you can enjoy half off on your second pizza. That's right, buy one of any size and get the second one half off. This offer is only available for dine-in. So gather your friends and family and head over to Charlu's Tap House. The famous meal deal is backed by popular demand. For just $29.95, you can choose between a medium two-topping pizza or a large plate of spaghetti with two mouth-watering meatballs. You have the option to indulge in a large house or Caesar salad. It's a complete feast at an unbeatable price. Charlu's Tap House is the place to be every day of the week from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Enjoy a refreshing drink from our beer wall and get a fantastic 25% off during happy hour. Don't miss out on these incredible offers. Visit Charlu's Tap House today and savor the flavors you love at the prices that can't be beaten.
Hello, food fans. Chef Cal DiMercurio here, inviting you to tune in each Wednesday for an hour of helping you turn the drudgery of preparing home meals into having fun in the kitchen. We'll be sharing tips, tricks, and tempting insights that are sure to make your time in the kitchen a pleasant and fulfilling one. Come join me and my wife Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. at Cooking Like a Pro, right here on KCNR 1460.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel has a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Susan Eastman, financial advisor, Stifel Nicolaus. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Give me a call at 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Do you like pancakes? Yeah, we like pancakes. Do you like French toast? Yeah, we like French toast. Can't wait to get enough waffles.
Oh boy, waffles. I'm ready for this. I'm excited about this next segment.
Okay, Eggo waffles or Belgian waffles?
Oh, don't say Eggo waffles. Not on a chef show. Come on. You know, and I think my dad's father actually invented Eggo waffles because I remember going back to Colorado just decades and decades ago. We were real small. And I remember he said, "Hey, we're going to have waffles." And he grabbed them out of the freezer already made and put them in the toaster. Never seen it before. So that, I'm sure this was way before they invented Eggos because this was like in the, I don't know, late 60s or something.
Toaster
but anyway, getting to our topic for the B-block here is a breakfast for dinner. Now, the thing about breakfast for dinner, and I don't know how many people out there enjoy this. I was talking to my mom and dad because we had breakfast for dinner a lot. And I asked Dad, I said, you know, where'd this come from? It's a generational thing or something. Because just out of curiosity, he says, "No, I like breakfast." I asked Mom, and she goes, "No, your dad likes breakfast." I said, "Okay, so we have breakfast for dinner." And I remember I was working in at a location here, and I don't know, it's about 4 years ago. It was an independent living facility, and we had about 80, I think, residents. And my brother's wife's dad, Jack, I remember he said, "Hey, can we have breakfast for dinner?" So I said, "Sure, what do you want?" He goes, I want an omelet. So I started an omelet. So these are people in the age category of, you know, right, 80, give or take, you know, some higher, I mean, a few, maybe a little bit lower. And I'll tell you, everybody, I mean, like out of 80 people, I'd make like 78 waffles. It was just crazy how many people of that generation, which is the generation, you know, just prior to me and mine, just love breakfast for dinner. So I don't know if any, hey, if you're out there and you have any insights on, where breakfast for dinner came from, maybe give us a call down here.
I think it's comfort food. I mean, you know, having IHOP available at, you know, 6, 7 o'clock midnight when you're rolling through a town. It's a comfort food.
Yeah. So 605-4567. And I agree, because those are when Denny's and IHOP, these restaurants that have been around for quite a while, they're pretty much along thoroughfares. You know, you'll see them, you know, down like, you know, I-5 all the way down. And you're right. They were open 24 hours, and you could, you know, people just pop in. And so breakfast was on the menu. And I always thought that was a – what was a cool thing, but I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just because it's unique, but salty and sweet, right? Bacon, waffles, syrup, pancakes.
Well, it's also convenience. I mean, we do that a lot. It's like, hey, what do you want for dinner? We haven't been shopping recently. We always have bacon on hand. We've always got sausage in the freezer on hand. You've always got pancake mix on hand. You've always got eggs on hand. Mm-hmm. So you can throw together breakfast for dinner just about any night.
Sweetheart, everybody has bacon on hand. Everybody has bacon always on hand. Yeah, our 15-year-old would literally not eat, I don't think, if it was for bacon.
And then everything's better with bacon.
And we have our chickens. Our chickens, they're, boy, I tell you, we get some great eggs. There's more yolk than there is white. These things are just luscious. So, and in fact, when you whisk them up, they almost come out like a, almost orange.
Mm-hmm.
Almost orange.
They have a lot of color
to
them.
Anyway, let's get to our topic on breakfast for dinner. Variety of things. Waffles real good. And again, if you make waffle batter, pancake batter, you can make it the day before. You can have it for breakfast, and then maybe 2 days later have it for dinner. All you're going to want to do is, as that flour tightens it up, you're going to want to add a little bit more water to it and just loosen it up a little bit, get it to that consistency that it was when you first made it.
What's the difference between waffle batter and pancake batter? Is it more eggs in a waffle batter? There's something a little different about it.
There's in a waffle batter, you're always going to have oil because you don't want it to stick. In pancake batter, you don't always have that. Eggs are going to help expand it a little bit. It really depends on the mix. These days, most of the mixes are just add water to them,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but any kind of flavoring, any kind of spice, any kind of seasoning that you might want to add. I know that chicken and waffles is a real big thing. There's some actual franchisees and some restaurant
chains. Well, the holidays
are
coming. Pumpkin spice latte waffles.
Pumpkin spice latte waffles. I'll have to write that one down. But biscuits and gravy, I mentioned almost earlier. French toast, again, I mentioned. But again, it's that combination of sweet and salty that we really crave a lot. Generally, you know, I think most health professionals would probably say, you know, lunch should be your bigger meal of the day. Some say breakfast because you're kind of starting after basically a period of fasting after, you know, you've been sleeping. But, yeah, I don't know that I'd eat a waffle or a big stack of, you know, pancakes before I went to bed, because I might just sit there. But you know, and English muffins. Yesterday I took a quick trip down to Napa Valley, California, and went by Modell and picked up my wife's favorite English muffins.
With focaccia bread. Focaccia.
Oh, yeah, it's these muffins are, in fact, they're so good, they limit the amount you can actually buy.
And they ship them around the world.
And they're light, they're airy, they're fluffy, they have the cornmeal, kind of a crust on them when they bake them off in those pans. And it's just the method of the way that they cook them. And I know you've made English muffins before.
I have gotten their recipe, and I've made the Model Bakery muffins on the pan.
Oh, yeah. So I call it Modell. You call it Model. I think Modell sounds
French. Modell sounds better.
It sounds French, yeah.
But they named it like, you know, like a Model T, a Model A. It was an old, they found a coin in the wall of the bakery when they took it over and found out that's what it was called. It was originally called the Model Bakery.
Really?
Yeah.
Model.
Model
team. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Model, Modell, either one. They only had the one up at the north tip of the valley, and now they have another one down in Napa City itself, which is right at the.
And they have a cookbook.
Yep,
so you can make cookbook. All of their stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, so Model English muffin again. If you want to do a eggs Benedict. Can't go wrong. You need a really good muffin, something with lots of nooks and crannies to get that crisp and that butteriness in there. Of course, traditionally, would be Canadian bacon, which is just, the cured back. Kind of, if it was a beef, it would be kind of that filet mignon piece of the back or the back strap, some might call it on a deer. But it's off the pork. So it's that same loin, that same boneless loin with the bone taken off of it. But then that's cured and smoked, and that's what we get our Canadian bacon.
It's funny, it is not actually called Canadian bacon in Canada. Our Canadian friends said it's called back bacon.
They don't
have Canadian bacon in Canada.
It comes from the back.
Yeah.
Well, do they have American bacon?
They might have American bacon for the back bacon.
Well, yeah, we have dear friends in Edmonton. Edmonton, yeah, Canada. But anyway, yeah, and then a nice poached egg on there and a nice hollandaise sauce. And, you know, hollandaise sauce is one of the five mother sauces. It's the most challenging, to make because there's, it can be broken. There's a few different things that can happen to it. But, they also have a Knorr.
The Knorr sauce packet.
Knorr's a,
that is my go-to.
Yeah, they're a great company. I know a lot of the chefs that work in the in their lab coats and such in there and in their own chemist type. But yeah, they make a great little mix. Poaching an egg, simple. You want to bring your water. I've literally taught thousands and thousands of people how to poach eggs because it's, cooks just basically they come in the morning, they put their water on there, they turn it on, they just boil it. Looks like you're boiling, poaching eggs and boiling milk or something. No, you want that water to just be simmering. All right, bring your water up to a simmer, and you just have to have some acid in there. These days they use vinegar, distilled white vinegar, is fine. Some vinegars are too strong. I wouldn't use a red wine vinegar, just a white vinegar. In the old days, we actually used to use pickle juice.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we'd get our water come up to a simmer. We'd add some pickle juice. Then you crack your eggs in there, and then you set your timer for 3 minutes. And then at 3 minutes on the nose, you go ahead and use a slotted spoon, and you take that out, let that water drip off of it, and there you go. That's the perfect, perfect poached egg, three minutes.
I think you taught me you bring it up to a boil, then you switch it off for just a moment while you put the egg in so you don't have that heavy agitation, then turn it back on.
You're talking about boiled eggs.
Boiled eggs. I thought you did that for poaching.
No, hard-boiled eggs, you do that because you don't want the egg. You want the egg to start to cook before the shell cracks because you don't want to have that leakage coming from there. But no, you just keep it on simmer the whole time.
Okay.
You're poaching eggs, 3 minutes, and you're set. And again, hollandaise on that, a variety of different ways to do it. It is, of course, one of the more traditional breakfasts that you see. But it's great.
What kind of riffs can you do on an Eggs Benedict? I know some people try to do different things to it. Do you use different proteins?
Yeah, you could do a different protein on it. I mean, I wouldn't call it, Eggs Benedict, of course. Eggs Benedict Arnold. I imagine it came from somewhere around there. I didn't Google it, but no, you can change the protein if you wanted to do something like a thin grilled. You do want it thin because it's a knife and fork, breakfast, but you still want to, want it to be fairly thin. So you could use, just something easy to cut, pound it out, thin chicken would be fine. One thing that's real popular is using steamed spinach. So you steam some spinach and dry it real well if you're going to use a muffin. But most of the time when they do it, eggs Florentine, it's called.
Florentine, okay.
Yeah, they just put the spinach down. They'll put the egg in it. And then that can actually get hollandaise or it can get a cream sauce.
What if you did like a corned beef instead of a corned beef hash?
Oh, and that would get a little bit of nutmeg on too. You could do. Yeah, well, corned beef, I love corned beef and hash, and a poached egg is something that's kind of the best egg for it. So, yeah, and then as far as the sauce, again, you can be creative. Huevos Rancheros is kind of a take on that as well.
I've actually never had that. What's one of your favorites?
The red sauce and the poached egg, and again, that can get a variety of things on it. But that would be more of a red sauce. You could even do that on like a carne, not carne asada, but like a the polo, the green pork that you like.
I can't think of it right now because you put me on the spot.
Okay.
Verde. It's verde, but I'm like,
yeah, chili verde.
Should there you go. There you go.
Yeah. So, but so yes, you can, you know, that's the thing about cooking is just be creative, enjoy it, have fun. There's these hard rules to just kind of start with. Then after that, it's all flexible. So this is again, Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be back in just a moment. Let's take a quick break at the bottom of the hour. Thanks for listening.
Celebrate the 40th anniversary of the veteran-owned Sandwichery at 1341 Tehama Street in downtown Reading. This mom-and-pop restaurant has been serving up delicious, quick, and fresh, made-to-order sandwiches with generous portions at a great price for 40 years. Enjoy a club sandwich, pastrami corned beef, a Californian with turkey, avocado, and cheese, an egg salad sandwich, roast beef, chicken salad, and I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. They also have vegetarian sandwiches and much more. Plus, hot dogs and homemade soups, potato salad, and big bakery-style cookies. Sandwichery is also a destination featuring unique World War II decor with inside dining and outside shaded patio seating. Sandwichery, celebrating their 40th anniversary this July. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 2 at 1341 Tehama Street in downtown Reading. Sandwichery, dine in or take out. Call 530-246-2020. That's 530-246-2020.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Well, there you go. Frim, fram, saw.
She said she didn't want bacon. Why would she want bacon?
I don't know. Communist. I'm not sure. I don't know. But that one's going out to, that went out to you, Jack. Paula, his daughter, said that was one of Pop's favorite songs. So we, anyway, but yeah, we're here into our third block. I think they call it professional. Can we sound, does that make it sound professional? But so I made a dish for my wife the other day, and this is a dish that has a history to it. It will be in the cookbook, and we'll be talking more and more about that in the coming days, weeks, months, and hopefully not too much longer than that. But this is a dish where, that when I very first started, and I came up to a chef, and I was 16, and I mentioned this, I think one of our first shows, that I just went in the back of his kitchen. He's in there banging pots and pans around, and I said, chef, I'd like to wash your dishes for free if you let me just watch you cook. And that kind of started this friendship, and you know, that was way before Child Protective Services, and I mean, you could get away with those things, you know, I suppose. I don't know. It used to be a lot different. But anyway, I volunteered and I really enjoyed it, and we really hit it off, and I came in there for dinner, a real special meal that I asked him to prepare for me. I just said, here, I think I gave him $100, and that was a lot of money. It would have been, 82 or something, super early 80s. And I said, here's $100, make it. And I got caviar and I got all kinds of things that as a kid I never had before. Remember, I'm born, but pretty much raised since I was born up here in the North State. And
we don't have that kind of food up here typically.
Yeah, not a whole lot of exotic things. Well, you know, DiMaccheros, we were blessed to be able to do that for a long time. But anyway, so this dish that he made me, and you just take a long fillet. Remember when we talk about seafood, it's fillet, two L's. We talk about beef, it's one L, fillet. So fillet. So we're talking about a fillet of a halibut, about 7 ounces. And
which is really good size. I mean, it's a chunk of fish.
Yeah, yeah. And we just kind of put a cut, maybe a 1.5 inch cut at the end, and we kind of spread open one end of the fish, just a couple of inches, and we cover it with puff pastry, and it's, so we can make it in the shape of a fish. So we take the halibut, and the very first thing we do is we make a mushroom duck cell. Now, I was trained, I went through a French apprenticeship program. We always call it a duck cell. I heard it on some food show of some sort the other day, called it duck cells or something different, but I'm calling it duck cell. Okay. DUXELLE. And really what it is, it's mushrooms cooked down to a paste. So you're just going to start off with a little bit of butter. Remember, when you're cooking with butter, it always helps if you're going to saute it, which is cooking, over high heat, in a hot saute pan. You want to, what we call clarify it. So you want to melt the butter down. And then you want to take the salt that comes to the top of the butter and then the milk solids, which go to the bottom, and you want to discard those. You can actually use the top, the salt. It's good. We used to throw it on our vegetables because it's just salty butter. But anyway, it tastes great. So we use that clarified butter because the clarified without the milk or the dairy in it is going to have a much higher burning point, so you're going to be able to get it hotter without it burning. So you want to get your oil medium hot. You want to throw in some garlic. You want to throw in some shallots, maybe one part garlic, two part shallots. When I say a part, in this case, if it was a teaspoon of garlic, then that was considered one part, then two part shallot would be 2 teaspoons. So if it was a tablespoon and one part, two parts would be 2 tablespoons. So we throw that in the pan, let that just start to cook up. Do not let it brown. Never let your garlic brown. Once your garlic browns, throw it out, start over.
So are you doing like a sweating method, just trying to get it to translucent?
No, we're not sweating. It's a high temp, so we're going to go ahead and saute it.
Okay.
Then we're going to throw in our mushrooms, and we're going to chop those up. You can slice them and then, you know, use a little chopper. If you have a little, you know, if you're in a saute pan, you might want to use something made out of wood or something made out of high temperature. You know,
well, the chopper that you can get on through our website on Amazon is the one that we use all the time.
Well, that thing's amazing. Is it to chop anything? Is that Pamper Chef? What is that?
No, that's where we first got it. They were the first ones to come out with it. Now there's lots of knockoffs. Farberware is who makes it. Now you can get on Amazon. So if you go to culinarilyyours.net and click on our shop, you will find the Farberware chopper that we're talking about that we use to chop up the mushrooms.
Yeah, and there is nothing better that I found if I'm doing like ground beef, ground sausage, and I want to chop something up in the pan. It's great.
It's like $8.
It's really heavy, a heavy plastic material of some sort, maybe silicone or something, but it chops it up great. So we've sauteed this up and the mushrooms are now tender. We're going to let that keep going, and then we're going to go ahead and add some cream to that. And basically what we're making is we're making a paste. All right, so, you know, you're not adding a whole lot of cream, maybe a quarter cup, half cup, depending on how many mushrooms you're using. But then we cook this down, and it turns into a paste. Once you add the cream, let it boil till it starts to simmer down, and then go ahead and just reduce the temperature until the cream's completely, you know, folded in to the mushrooms, and then go ahead and shut that off and set that aside. And then what we do is we take this mushroom duxel, this mushroom paste, and this happens to be what you use when you make a beef Wellington also. A traditional French beef Wellington also has mushroom duxel on it as well. But this duxel goes on the halibut, and then the halibut's covered with pastry.
You know was that a pie dough that you used or a phyllo dough? What type of did you use?
Yeah, that was just a pie dough.
It's like a Pillsbury pie dough that you rolled
exactly,
out.
Exactly. So, you know, you can make your own, of course, if you want to spend the time on that. It's, you know, I think that what we look at when we talk about this, and we've talked about it before, is these convenience products, these things that are saving you time. That's a big, big, you know, part of the whole process of cooking. Not everyone has time to maybe make this from scratch or that from scratch. So maybe you start off with a product that's maybe a frozen product or maybe even a canned product. On canned stuff, you really don't want to stay away.
Depends upon the product.
Well, stay away from your vegetables. I mean, canning, when you can something, you pretty much destroy the vitamins and minerals. Okay, so you always want to go with fresh when it comes to your vegetables and most of your fruits as well when available. But hey, if you're in the middle of winter and you
need to keep it till next year,
You want cherries, you're probably going to plan on getting some canned ones. But
so anyway, you got this big old piece, this fillet of halibut, this white fish.
Yeah, and then we just went 400 degrees, a little bit hot. You want that pastry to brown when the fish to cook. All the way through, you don't want the fish to come out dry, and you don't want the pastry to be undercooked or overcooked. So it's a matter of just practicing with it. Usually takes 10 to 12 minutes.
How did you tell that it was done? Because I missed that part. Did you do a temperature gauge? Did you do it by touch?
I knew that it'd be done. I've made this dish a lot. So that's kind of like when you get used to cooking something and you know that that's done by looking at it. I knew that the fish would be done because it was almost an inch thick. So I knew that by the time the pastry was nicely brown, the fish would be cooked.
And it's a little more that the color of the fish changes a little bit, right?
It's no longer opaque. It's no longer translucent.
Okay.
It will become a solid, in the case for halibut, it would become a solid white. And then we serve that with a beurre, meaning
butter.
Butter and blanc meaning
white.
White, yeah. So it's a white butter sauce, a white butter French sauce, where you'll take usually equal parts cream and vinegar. And you can use your garlic and your shallots, but you're going to take your cream and vinegar, and you're just going to boil that. And you're just going to continuously boil it. Now, if you boil milk, it's going to break, it will curdle. But with cream, with heavy cream, 40%, it won't. And it will just reduce, and it would just come this nice, lush flavor. Then we're to 1 cup of cream and to 1 cup of vinegar, I added 4 ounces or 1/4 pound of butter. And then your garlic shallots, salt, white pepper, just a beautiful sauce. And the thing is, this dish is so creamy that it really needs
something to cut through it.
Exactly.
And that's, I was surprised. I didn't know that you would do cream and vinegar in a sauce. And that vinegar, because you think of tartar sauce. Tartar sauce is a creamy sauce with acid in it. And it's the same, same similar taste profile.
Yeah. You know, and if you're making your own tartar sauce, instead of just using a regular vinegar, use a malt vinegar. Because that's how I've always done it. And, or for decades anyway. And it's just, you know, malt vinegar goes great with fish and chips, and that's kind of generally what you're gonna dip that in. And then, I also wanted to mention something that popped in my head the other day. I was going through my 1,000 cookbooks at home. And again, I started collecting books way before there was this thing called internet. But Charlie Trotter, and, just amazing gentleman, died way too young. You can actually go, if you want to know, the heart that I have for cooking, you can go online and search Charlie Trotter ACF keynote address. Charlie Trotter ACF keynote address. And it's him talking. He's giving the keynote address to the American Culinary Federation. This was a while back. He passed away maybe, I don't know, probably been about 10 years.
About 10 years now.
Yeah, but just an amazing man. His restaurant was in Chicago. And this guy was a genius. He was actually an anthropologist, and he just decided to become a chef.
Very well learned.
Yeah, and he just wanted to make food taste good. So, I mean, so he broke a lot of different things. For example, if he might take a halibut dish and cook it by poaching it in veal stock, which, of course, is a white beef stock, which you really wouldn't do as a French chef or even American chef for that matter. But he experimented on these things because, he got, like, you know, French Laundry and Thomas Keller does down in Napa Valley in Yountville, is they get the best ingredients. And then you just let the ingredients speak for themselves. But, I remember once we had a 9-course meal there with, 3 dear friends of mine, Dennis, one who's no longer with us, he was a local chef here, but we had a 9-course meal, and then Chef Trotter threw in a course in between each course. So we ate for 5 hours. We had 18 courses, and remember, a course is only like 3 bites. you know, and it's just this amazing array of flavors. And you have this and you take these 3 bites of this food course of whatever it is, and you just have this sense of sadness because it's all gone, and until the next course comes, and then you forgot all about that one. Maybe like when you're young and you get a new, you know, significant other or something.
It would take me 5 hours. It would take 5 hours to get through that much food because, you know me, I'm not a big eater, so a couple bites and I'm full.
Oh, well, it was, you know, and also very, very expensive. But, you know, you only go around once, and it was always a lot of fun.
But what's really cool about Charlie Trotter now is you can get his videos. They're starting to post them from the kitchen sessions online.
Well, that's always a good thing. So Cooking Like a Pro, we'll be back in just a moment. You found us at KCNR. That's 1460 AM. Back in a moment.
Look at the skies, they have stars in their eyes, on this lovely Bellanada. Side by side with your loved one, you'll find an enchantment here. The night will weave its magic spell when the one you love is near.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
We'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for all their community support, including the bike shop. They do so much for our community, and we're beyond grateful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rancheria. You are the ones we can always count on to help us out in tough times. They're the people that have always been there for us, much more so than anyone else in our community. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Hey, Redding, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Redding on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi friends, RC from Tobacco and Brew with this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Toscano's Master Age Cigars. For all those who enjoy Kentucky fire-cured tobacco comes Toscano's Premium Blend. Micro-fermented, flame-cured, aged, then aged an additional 360 days, all under the daily watch of an affinatore. Some have called this Toscano's Masterpiece. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Mimi Mosley here from Mosley Family Cellars. We'd just like to thank Redding Rancheria for their generous gift to us. It was so helpful and helped to keep us alive.
Hi, I'm Shelby Mahara with Squishy Doodle Face Painting, and I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support. They always help the community and always help to take care of us when they can.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing the bell.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Dino Martin, yes. Gosh, people even know that name anymore than in the generations to come. No, I don't know. I mentioned Frank Sinatra to someone that was, he were only like 15 years younger than me. And I was like, oh, no, I never heard of him. But anyway, thanks, Dino, for that intro. This is our wine segment that we're going to be talking about some wines we've been talking about and taking different varietals. So, each week to talk about. And this week, we picked a white varietal that's, been just a favorite of mine as well as, my wife's ever since this first kind of came, before it came on the scene. You didn't really even see it anywhere when we first, and I'm, in fact, I'm sure we were the first restaurant in the North State to have it back in 07, 08, 09 when we had Rivers Restaurant.
Well, the first time I ever had it, we were staying in Napa, and then next door was this winery called Dariush. And I'd never had Viognier before, and I fell in love with it.
Viognier. It's just, I like it because it's in between, you know, the Chardonnays of the 90s that, where they were real buttery and a lot of malolactic fermentation going on, to get that lactate flavor. And then a lot of, they'd seen a lot of barrel time, so they had a lot of that toastiness. So that they were all, a lot of the Chardonnays were just coming out kind of very, very similar. And then on the other side of that, you had your other whites that were on the sweeter side, your Gewurztraminers, your Rieslings. I'd probably put some of your blushes in that category as well. And then you had a little bit drier wines, like with your Sauvignon Blancs. And there's a variety of other ones that are in there. But Viognier, it kind of started out as a kind of a blending grape, and it just became its own thing there, where people just started doing it as a standalone varietal. So when I say varietal is the type of grape. And again, the law in California is, it's different a little bit everywhere, but depending on the percentage of that varietal that needs to be in there. Cause if it's used, if you have like, let's say you have Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, and you want to make a blend, and there's not a certain percentage of any one of those three, then it would be
just a
white wine. White wine. And the appellation would actually say the appellation as where the grapes were grown.
Would have to be California.
So Viognier, again, a wonderful wine. It's got a lot of crisp, but when you start off, you get a lot of fruit. Some of the things you'll normally see would be some like a tangerine flavors, mango, even a honeysuckle. And I think that when you take a wine and you're tasting it, and you want to get those flavors again. Remember, the first thing to do is to take a small sip and draw some air over that, so it completely coats your entire tongue. Because you want to pick up all those flavors, and your tongue picks up different flavors in different places on your tongue, right? We have sweet, salty, bitter.
Sour.
And then, of course, the new one.
Umami.
I don't even like to call it new anymore. It's been around
for so long.
Yeah, umami. Yeah, not you, daddy, right? Umami. Poor joke, probably. I don't know. It wasn't bad. I don't know.
Well,
anyway,
it's
off the top of it. I didn't write that down.
It's the meaty, buttery flavor. It's almost more of a texture flavor.
Yeah, so it's that flavor that you get that is basically considered like a meat flavor. You know, you get it from charbroil or char grilled, like barbecued mushrooms have a lot of umami.
Tomatoes.
Not fennel, because you get a little bit too much spice out of that, but generally mushrooms are in bell peppers. Yeah, those give that real meaty, I'd almost kind of describe it kind of an earthy flavor. But anyway, getting back to Viognier, again, you're going to get a lot of those light fruit flavors. So you really want to practice, and we're going to be doing, and it's going to be a while, we'll let you know well in advance, but we are going to be doing a tasting seminar. Online, we'll be doing that through Culinarily Yours. It'll be off of our Cooking Like a Pro podcast, but we'll be doing this during online in a Zoom format, and it's going to be teaching people how to taste, teaching how to pick flavors up. I mean, for us, you know, again, if you look at food as fuel, like we do most of the time in America, where you're just eating to sustain you to the next thing that you have to do, well, that's great and dandy, but remember, you're missing a lot, you know, and again, we've mentioned this, and we'll probably mention it every time we do this show, but, you know, and you want to eat, and you want to enjoy it. You go around once, why not enjoy it? Why just have something, you know, that's quick, that isn't going to be, you know, good for you or nutritious for you? It's just going to be something, well, I guess it could be, but again, why not enjoy the flavors, and especially the flavors of the season?
So now, Viognier is a white, so you would serve a little bit cooler, more cold. Is that something that comes straight out of the fridge?
Yeah, it would come out of the fridge, but you'd want to warm it up. You wouldn't want it refrigerator temperature, which is, you know, 40, 42, you know, somewhere in that area. Depends
so maybe
on
bring
the
it
fridge.
To about a 50, 58.
Yeah, 55. I think 55 is good on that there. And then you start, because remember, cellar temperature, I think it's 60 or 62 degrees in France, and your wines were stored. Because they want them to age slower. They want them to take all that time, because remember, those grapes are continuing to develop in there, and there's tannin which is continuing to work through the process of being able to allow the wine to become more fruity and more luscious. But with the Viognier, chicken, pork, kind of think of it, white wine with white meats, red wine with red meats, but that all goes out the window, folks, if you don't like it. So drink what you like. That's number one. Drink what you like.
Oh, I definitely have a Viognier with the steak.
But with the Viogniers, yeah, usually chicken, pork, veal, if you're doing that. Any of your fish, and especially shellfish, because shellfish has that, what I like to call an oceanic kind of flavor to it. It's almost kind of mineral or metallic, you might want to say. So I do this clams dish, and it's steamed clams, and I do it in a garlic nectar. So it's like a tightened up garlic broth, tighten it up with a little bit of cornstarch with tarragon and garlic, and you steam your clams, toss that in there, and you've got this rich, delicious, succulent shellfish dish, and then you got this great wine to help balance those flavors out. So when I say shellfish, remember, shellfish are broken up into two categories, right? You have shellfish, which are crustaceans, and shellfish, which are mollusks. A crustacean is a shellfish that has more than two shells. So a crustacean is lobster, crab, shrimp, those items. Where a mollusk is one or two shells. So one or two shells would be your clams, would be your oysters, would be your scallops. Scallop has two shells. Escargot. Escargot falls in that category. So, again, you have mollusks, crustaceans, but all that falls under the heading of shellfish. And again, a Viognier is just a great dish to help cut through that butteriness of the dish you're
preparing. Well, it's right in the middle. It's just a little bit sweet, just a little bit acidic, a little bit floral, a little bit fruity. It's very mild.
Yeah, I would recommend if you go to a restaurant and they have a wine by the glass list, if they have the Viognier, just tell me you want to taste a sample. Just tell me you want a little taste. They'll give you an ounce or two to try and swirl that around, to put it over your tongue, draw some air over it, and see what you think. Because, as a restaurateur, the one thing I've always wanted to do after doing this for well over, 40 years, close to 50 in cooking, but owning restaurants, is I want to educate my patrons and my guests that come in. You want to educate them, because the next time, if they have white Zinfandel, the next time they come in, maybe they're having a Riesling. And then maybe you bring them up to a Gewürztraminer, and before you know it, they're having a Chardonnay, and then maybe they move up to a Viognier. A Viogniers can be a variety of different, a variety spectrum of pricing, but you're generally going to want a Viognier that's, no more than 2 or 3 years old. It's a varietal that's made to drink. They don't really make those to lay down, or it's just a term we use for.
No, I would have put it with the dish that we had earlier this week. We took that Charlin Million that we talked about at the top of the hour, mm-hmm. and then we had those salty pork ribs. That would have been beautiful with the Viognier, because you've got the saltiness in the pork, you've got a little bit of sweet in the Viognier, and you've got the melon fruit that's going to bring out the fruit in the wine itself. To me, that would have been a perfect pairing.
I'll remember to grab some. I have to grab a bottle of Viognier on the way. Well, it came. Not tonight. On the way home, got commitments, but hey, again, so we'll be going to talk about wines. You have questions about wines or food and wine pairing, please let us know. Again, you can go to the podcast, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Again, cookinglikeapropodcast.net. Send us a question if you like. We appreciate you folks listening. And again, we like to cover at least one wine. And this schedule of how we do these is going to be very, very flexible as we continue to move on. And as we just, but as we continue to go through the fresh updates, always kind of nice, and then having some give it out some recipes, and then the Viognier. So,
and if you want
some kind of a wine
free wine guide, you can go to culinarilyyours.net our main website, and there is a free wine guide on there.
Yeah, there is a free wine guide. Yeah, culinarilyyours.net, and you can just download that. The variety of things on there. There's a great little couple of tools, one for writing a nice grocery list and a variety of things that my beautiful wife Krista has put together. So go there, and again, hope you enjoy it, folks. But again, this is something that's a passion of ours. It's something that I've always enjoyed. Been doing it since I was a child. And my wife, who is IBM, right?
Italian by marriage.
Italian by marriage. Okay. So that's kind of, you know, you put that together and here you go. You got Chef Cal and Krista DiMercurio. Again, cooking like a pro. We appreciate you folks tuning in. We look forward to any questions you send to our podcast. And we will look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Have a wonderful weekend. God bless you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.